Tonight's episode of the Gamecasters, I talk about some games I've played recently, detail the little mini convention I run every year, and talk about my 10x10 from 2017. Stay tuned. All right. We are back with episode 12. Well, I say we are back, but I really mean I am back. I mean, we are the Gamecasters, but it's really just me, the Gamecaster, the lonely Gamecaster here on an island all by myself. I'm still Jeremy-less. Jeremy, come back, Jeremy. Even though episode 11 was by far the greatest episode in Gamecasters history, I still miss you, man. I need you. I really want you. Come back. Anyway, so episode 12, we are, or I am going to talk about the 8th annual Nerdfest, which is a mini convention that I run or have been running for the past 8 years. And it's just kind of gotten bigger and better every year. Maybe not so much bigger, but I think it's gotten better every year. It always gets a little bit more refined, a little bit more detailed, and we add a little bit more stuff to do for the collective group. So I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about some games that I've been playing recently, you know, kind of since between the last two podcasts, just some games of note that I really kind of want to talk about. And I'm going to go over my 10x10 that I'm doing this year. I didn't do one last year. I did one 2 years ago, failed miserably. I didn't do one last year, so this year I'm going to try it again. And it's a lot of two-player stuff. Well, okay, hold on. I'm getting ahead of myself here. Let's just wait and talk about that. That'll probably be last. Because, I don't know, kind of like a top 10 list, 10x10, who knows, we'll save those for the end. So, let's get started talking about the mini convention that I run every year. I call it Nerdfest. This is the 8th annual. It's ridiculous that it's been 8 years. I can't believe that. It really doesn't feel like it. When I started it, I wasn't even really into board games at all. Bill, the guy I talk about all the time, who kind of got everybody in our group into board games, he had Defenders of the Realm, I think, had either just come out or he had just got it. So he came over. That was like the only board game, really, that was at the first Nerdfest, because it was really a video game fest. It was in my basement at my old house, and we had a bunch of TVs set up. And I had, you know, a different system on each TV, and it was a really, really great time. But it was, you know, video games, and with a tiny little side dish of board games. And throughout the next year, I stopped my video game playing, just like really slowed down to a screeching halt, and my board game playing just like ramped up, you know, 0 to 60. So pretty much from the second annual Nerdfest to now, to the 8th annual one, it's been primarily, I would say, 95% board game related. Much to the chagrin of a couple of my friends who really didn't get on the board game wagon and just all they wanted to do was play video games, they kind of begrudgingly and, you know, bemoaningly just, you know, show up and hope that we play video games and kind of poo-poo the board game playing. But whatever. Doesn't matter. Most of them have fun. They have fun anyway. There's enough stuff. There's enough board games around to pretty much hold anyone's interest, you know, depending on what we play. So, man, it's such a cool event. I mean, all of my friends come, you know, a lot of their friends sometimes, you know, fringe people that you meet, they kind of show up, and new people come, and you show them the hobby sometimes through this fest, and it's always just a great time. It's the entire weekend. It's usually, you know, the middle to the end of January every year. This year it was this past January 20th, 21st, and 22nd. It used to be held at my house. Now it's at my buddy Dave's house, who's just got a much better space. His basement is enormous. I live in a colonial house, and it's a bigger house than my old house, but it doesn't really have that big room, you know, that's adequate to hold everybody. So my buddy Dave and his wife Terry, they have a nice, great big space. And it's just really great because it houses all the, you know, celebrities that we get to show up and all the amazing people that come. You know, Tom Vassell was there this year, and Z Garcia, and we had game designers there. Reiner Knizia was here. Sid Saxon came up from the grave and showed up. And all of this is a lie. But it was such a great time this year. I would say Saturday the 21st, was probably the best Nerdfest day to date. And what do we really do at Nerdfest? All we do is play games. I mean, it's all we do. You know, it's just there's constant games. I played 35, I had 35 game plays of 23, I think, different games I played at this Nerdfest, and it was just, you know, a nonstop blistering, you know, rampage of game playing, which we incidentally did not play Rampage. But anyway, it was just an amazing time, and I think a lot of it was due in part to some well-timed party games and tournaments that we ran. So last year, I kind of started this thing where I wanted to give away games, you know, kind of like little like conventions do. You know, I decided to amp up the fun a little bit in that way, kind of like in the meta, you know, for people to show up and have fun and, you know, oh, I'm at this Nerdfest, little convention thing with all my buddies, playing all these cool games, and I have a chance to win something. Like, that's pretty cool. So it kind of didn't work really last year. I tried to do like a play to win thing. You know, I wrote a list of like 10 games and said, here, you play these games, any one of these games throughout the convention. And if you win, you write your name on this sheet. And then at the end of the, you know, the weekend, I'll total up everybody's name, put them in a bucket, you know, or draw their names out. And then whoever I draw wins the games. I had two games. Well, nobody played the damn things. I mean, all the games on the list, I mean, there was like four of them got played one time. So there was like four people's names in the hat. It was really, it bummed me out a lot. I didn't really go to any trouble or anything, but I was really excited about that. And it just didn't play out the way I wanted it to. So I knew I wanted to do it again this year, but I wanted to make it better. So I created this Facebook group and I invited all my friends, you know, to this Facebook group and just called it Nerdfest. And it'll be perpetual. You know, I'll have it every year so we can, any kind of goings on of Nerdfest, we talk about there. So one of the questions I asked this year was, hey, I want to give away games as prizes again. But the play to win thing didn't really work last year. So what can we do? You know, and my buddy Bill had an idea to do a tumbling dice tournament. And if you don't know tumbling dice, it's a dexterity game where you're just taking these little dice. You have like four dice in a color and you basically just toss them or gently toss them down this, it's like stairs almost, wooden like stairs kind of thing. And they're different levels, right? So you're like, the dice is like falling down these little wooden stairs levels. And they have different numbers on them, each level. So the first level has zero. So if your dice lands there, you multiply the pips on your die by the level you're on. So the first thing is zero. If you land there, it's just worth nothing and it comes off. Then there's a one, a two, a three, and then a four at the end. So the most points you can get is having a six on that four. And it's ridiculously hard. There's these little bumpers that you're trying to hit to stop the dice, because nine times out of ten, you roll the dice down there and it just flies off the damn board because it's just, you know, it's just a really, it's tough. But it's super, super fun. And everyone is kind of at the same skill level, with the exception of a couple people who, you know, play it a ton. And I just really think that it was a perfect idea for this Nerdfest. You know, it was a great addition to Nerdfest. And it happened right in the middle of Saturday, and Saturday is always our biggest day. So we had about 20 people, and I know that probably doesn't sound big to a lot of you, but 20 was about, you know, as big as Nerdfest gets. And so we had this tournament, this tumbling dice tournament in the middle of it, and everyone was just hyped up and happy and excited, and you know, people were going nuts over it, and it was just a great time. We made a bracket, you know, a double elimination bracket. People were, you know, you'd play in teams of two, not teams, but you play in, you know, four people would play and the top two would advance. So it was like a double elimination thing. It was fantastic. And a buddy of mine won, who's not really super into board games, and that was actually really cool, you know, to see that. And then in the middle, or actually at the same time as the tumbling dice tournament, we also held a Clask tournament. And I've talked about Clask on an episode or two, I think in our Dex game episode. Did we have a Dex game episode? I think we did. We talked about Dex games in an episode, I know, and Clask was mentioned on there. So we also had a single elimination Clask tournament running concurrently with the tumbling dice tournament, and it was just freaking amazing, you know. And as soon as, you know, some people were, right when the people finished tumbling dice, the first like four people, I'd send them on over to Clask, and we had two Clask boards there. So, you know, they'd be two and two, and then boom, you'd play, and then as soon as the next people were done playing tumbling dice, they'd come over and play Clask. And it was just a great time. So I got to play a bunch of cool games at Nerdfest like I do every year. I never play enough. I never play as much as I want to. I will say this year, I think I got to play games that I wanted to play more so than I did every other year. Usually at the end of the Nerdfest every year, I have this feeling of like, you know, like it was fun, but damn, I really wanted to play this, and I didn't get to. And it was still super fun, but... Oh yeah, real quick, before I talk about the games, another thing we did this year, I wanted to have t-shirts made. A buddy of mine, Jeff, had these t-shirts made up for... He has a board game group that he runs through his high school, which is super awesome. He's a teacher at the high school, by the way. It's not my buddy who's in high school. Yeah, my 34-year-old man has a 16-year-old friend who's at school. Anyway, he's a teacher friend. And he runs a board game club kind of thing at his high school, and he had t-shirts made up for it. And it was really, really a cool thing, and he gave me one, and it was awesome. And, you know, so that gave me the idea for Nerdfest, you know, like we should have Nerdfest t-shirts to make it, you know, fit the theme of Nerdfest, right? I mean, nerds are going to be wearing t-shirts that say Nerdfest to the Nerdfest. How freaking meta is that? Yo, dog, we heard you like Nerdfest, so we Nerdfested your Nerdfest so you can Nerdfest while you Nerdfest. So my buddy Ben is a graphic designer, and he kind of jumped in and said, hey, I'll design, you know, these shirts. He came up with this incredible logo. I'm actually wearing my shirt right now. It's a really super cool logo. Maybe I'll post it as the thumbnail to this episode so you can see it. But so we all, you know, a bunch of people bought these shirts. And so it was just, I don't know, it was a really cool way to bring everyone together this year. You know, it was, I mean, Nerdfest has been going on for like 8 years now. So it's been going on long enough that it's a thing. You know, it's not just us playing board games as friends anymore. It's like an annual thing that everyone plans for now. And it's kind of a phenomenon. It's taken on a life of its own in a way. We're even thinking about doing another one in the summer. There's just a lot of really cool, awesome things that are happening surrounding Nerdfest, and I'm just real pumped about it. So, some of the games I played that I wanted to play that I did get to play. And I'm not going to go through all 23 games that I played there, because a lot of them were, you know, simpler games or games that I play a bunch. And these are just, you know, some games that I love, and I always want to play more, you know, and a couple of them are new, and a couple of them just really, really, really got the people into Nerdfest this year. So, the first one I want to talk about is a game that I own that I have not played, and I had it for so long, I wanted to play it, because I love negotiation, I love, you know, wheeling and dealing, it's like my favorite thing ever. Bonanza is one of my favorite games, and this game is like that, but it's called Chinatown, and it is pure negotiation. All it is you got a board, and there's a bunch of buildings, tiles, like spaces on it. The board kind of reminded me of Lords of Vegas, the way it's set up. And basically what happens is you have these little discs that you put on lots, you know, like, so at the beginning of the game, I own lot 30, lot 40, lot 42, and lot 60. The goal is to have, is to build up these businesses, and you need them to be adjacent to one another. So you get your lots randomly. So like I said, I get lot 30, 40, 41, 43, and 60, we'll say. You know, lot 30 and lot 60 aren't doing anything for me because they're not touching. Lot 40 and 41 are adjacent. So that's kind of where I want to build. So maybe another player drew lot 42, right? And he also drew lot 31. So maybe one of the deals I make him is, hey, I'll trade you lot 31 for lot 42, you know, puts two adjacent for him, or I'll trade lot 30 rather for lot 42, puts two adjacent, you know, he's got two adjacent now, and then I have three adjacent. So maybe he says, well, that gives you three and I only have two, so you're gonna have to give me a little money for that. And I'll say, okay, fine, I'll give you, you know, the currency goes in like thousands of dollars, so I'll give you $1,000. And he's like, well, I don't know, how about $2,000? And I'm like, how about this, how about I give you $1,000, I take that space and any future tile that comes up that's like a 29 or a 32, I'll just give to you. You can just have it. You can just have it, right? At whenever I get it. And he's like, all right, it's a pretty good deal. So basically, you know, I win right now. I get these three spaces that are right next to each other that I can then build on. And he's got these two spaces, plus $1,000, plus a future benefit, you know, if I pull something. The way we play is deals are binding kind of thing. I don't know. It doesn't really say in the rule book if they are or not. But anyway, stuff like that. And that's the entire game. So basically, you get lots, then you build on them, and then you get paid based on the lot size. You know, so if I have a five-tile building and it's all connected, you know, I'll get like maybe like 110 grand. Versus if I have a three-tile building, I might only get like 40 grand or 50 grand. So, you know, you play six rounds, and then whoever has the most money at the end wins. And it's literally the whole time all you're doing is dealing with people. And I love that. It's like the best thing in the world about Bonanza. And this is just the exact same thing. And I was smitten with it. It was my game of the convention. I want to play it again. I think I would like, we played it with four players. I think I would even like to play it with five. What I loved about it is, so I came in third out of the four of us. It was all super tight. We were all within like a few, you know, thousand of whatever of each other. But so I came in third and I thought I won. I thought I had the game won. Like I was like, I've been killing it. You know, I made this sweet deal. I screwed some people, asked some stuff, you know, like, ha ha ha. And I really, really thought I had it won, and I didn't. And it was just kind of one of those things where I didn't care. You know, I wasn't frustrated. I wasn't like, ugh, well, that sucked. I got third place. I loved it. I loved every second of the game. The winning didn't even matter to me. It was more, what I enjoyed about it more, I think, was, you know, coming up with these really cool deals to make that people would be like, oh, well, that's a cool idea. Oh, yeah, let's do that, you know. Or masking something that's really good for me. Or really masking it's good for them, but it's really good for me. You know what I mean? Like, well, I'll give you this plus 3,000, but really it makes me like 40,000 in income, you know, but they don't see that right then because they're like, ooh, I get money right now, you know, and it's just stuff like that is super cool. Or like you see two other people dealing and you can do like, you know, three-way trades where like, I'll give you this if you give him this, so then he gives me that. You can do any of that. Where Bonanza, you're only allowed to trade with the active player. In this one, you can make deals with anyone whenever the hell you want. It's all kind of like free form. And it seems like that might be chaotic, and maybe it is a little bit, but I don't know. It was just fantastic. Now, one of the players, incidentally, the player that came in last place, Eric, he did not really enjoy it. Negotiation, he said, wasn't really his thing. So that's a pitfall of this game, as is Bonanza. If you're not one to like be creative in deal making, or maybe even be really outgoing and talkative, you're not probably going to have the best time with this, because that's literally the entire game. The whole game is just, I'll give you this, you give me this, what do you think? And then you're just making deals, and that's the whole entire game. So he didn't really enjoy it for that reason, and I can completely see that. It's not really the game's fault, it's just, you know, do you like that kind of game? And I encourage people who think they don't like it to give it a try, because you never know what, you know, you might enjoy it. And it's quick enough. It takes about an hour. It took us a little longer, but it felt lightning quick. It felt really fast. Anyway, that's Chinatown, and it's incredible. Another one of my favorite games that we got to play, I think I played this on the last day, first game on the last day of the fest, is Istanbul. Rüdiger Dorn's Istanbul, and that's like one of my favorite games. I kind of bought it on a whim a few years ago, right after it won the Kenner Spiel, I think. Was that 2014? I can't remember. But it won the Kenner Spiel. And I didn't know anything about it. I just saw, oh, it won the Kenner Spiel. And so I just bought it. And then I researched it, like, after I bought it, because that's what I do. I'm just kind of weird like that. I'm very impulsive. And it just hit. It hit. It was so awesome. I actually debuted it at a Nerdfest, I think, in 2015's Nerdfest. I debuted it. And my buddy Bill, again, who, you know, is the one that got us all into games, loved it maybe more than I did, bought it, bought all the expansions. And he wanted to play like a mega game of it, you know, Istanbul with all the expansions. I have the Mocha and Bakshish expansion, which is the first big box expansion that came out for it. I had never played it. And he has all like the little promos that came out for it. And because that's what he does. He's a completionist. He just gets it all. So we played that. It was massive. And, you know, it's big sprawling board because there's 5x5 tiles now you're playing with. And it was just freaking awesome. And again, I came in, I don't know, third place out of the five of us, which was kind of the theme for me of the entire fest. I would get second or third out of five players or four players pretty much the whole time. And I had a ball. I had a ball doing it. It was awesome, you know, because I was still playing my game and I still had a good time. I didn't feel stymied in anything I played. I didn't feel like I had no chance in anything I played. It just felt like I was just having a great time. And I just, if I happened to win, I happened to win. Most of the time I didn't. So anyway, that was Istanbul. It was, it's really cool. Well, I guess I didn't explain it at all. I don't know if you've played Istanbul, but if not, check it out. It's basically a spatial kind of game. You have like the stack of guys and you're moving them, you know, one or two tiles at a time, adjacent, orthogonally adjacent, and then, you know, dropping off one of your guys to take the tiles action. And then you move again on your next turn, drop a guy off, take his action. If you ever don't have any guys left, you know, except your leader guy, then you can't take the action. So you have to backtrack and pick guys up and take the action again. And it's a really cool spatial puzzle to try to figure out how to optimize, you know, how you move with where, you know, what you want to do. It's a race game. You're racing to get five, or with the expansions, six gems. And the first one to do that ends the game. And then it goes around one more time. Whoever has the most gems, usually the person at the end of the game, wins. And it's pretty fast. And it's light enough to where you don't feel like you have no idea what you're doing, but it's heavy enough to give you that crunch that you need that satisfies, you know, your gaming itch. It's just a perfect weight for me, and I think that's why I love it so much, and that's Istanbul. A heavier game I played on Friday night, the last game of Friday night, which, again, I own, and I had been wanting to play it for a long time. I've played it before, two or three times in the before, and I hated it the first time, loved it the second time, really loved it the third time, and got to play it again on Friday night, and that's Troyes, or it's spelled Troyes, T-R-O-Y-E-S, but it's Troyes by Z-Man. And it's a really heavy, dense, you know, kind of thinky type game. I don't even really know how to explain it mechanically. You basically roll a bunch of dice, and then you can buy other people's dice, and you use those dice to take actions. A lot of it's mathy, which I normally hate. Like, you're dividing, you know, pips on dice by the cards here to tell you how many actions on the card you can do. And it seems like a lot of stuff I would hate, but it is so much fun. I don't even know if I can explain why it's so much fun. It's just really satisfying to kind of maximize, you know, the pips on your dice. And you can buy other people's dice to use their stuff, but you got to pay all this money, and you got to balance the money that you spend with the, you know, the cards that you're getting, and making sure that what you're doing is worth what you're spending. And it's just, and you got to make sure that the other people aren't getting ahead of you, and because, you know, the points are like hidden, but you can kind of keep track of it if you want. And it's just like, and so we threw in the Ladies of Troyes expansion, which just adds some, I think there's a bunch of different modules, but we played with one of them where it adds, you know, these tiles around the outside of the board, and you can go on those tiles and they do all sorts of different cool stuff. You don't have to do it. I came in second place of the five of us. Did we play? Four or five of us. I came in second place, very, very close to winning, and I didn't touch the Ladies of Troyes. I swear it wasn't me. I didn't touch them. Although the guy that won, Bill, did utilize the Ladies of Troyes, and he eked me out by a couple points, so maybe that, perhaps that's why. Anyway, Troyes is incredible. I love it. It's a game that I don't think I could teach well, so I really will probably only play it with Bill, unfortunately. But at the same time, I don't think I'll get rid of it because it's just such a great game. So that's Troyes. Another game I got to play on Sunday is one of my, if not my favorite, Euro game, which the last few I've talked about have been, actually, and it's Belfort. And Belfort is just stunningly beautiful. It's an area majority, area control slash worker placement kind of game set in like a fantasy world, you know, elves and dwarves and gnomes and that kind of stuff. But the deal is you're building up the city of Belfort. You're like a contracted company, and you're competing against other contracted companies to build up Belfort. And it's just, the board is gorgeous. It's like this pentagram kind of board, pentagon board, and it's made up of like these pie slices. It's just a really cool thing, and how it works is just, you know, you just get a bunch of resources, then you build a bunch of cards in your hand, and you just try to figure out where to place your little houses to, you know, get the advantage in a territory. And my favorite part about it is the timing of it. The timing is so tense and engaging. You know, do you go first so you can build all your stuff right away where you want to? Or do you go last so you can build all your stuff at the very last, you know, you can see where everyone else is going, and then you can go, okay, well, this guy has two here. Well, I'm going to put three here now because I get to go last to see what you're doing. And then you can swoop in and score a bunch of points in a scoring round. And it's awesome for that reason. We played a five-player game. We used the expansion, which I don't think I'll ever play without. It adds these character powers, which are just, they just make the game even better, I think. It takes a longer time to play, but I don't care because the game is great. That's Belfort. So me and Dave, the guy who hosted this year and last year's Nerdfest, were talking. You know, we were just like, this was one of the best Nerdfests ever. And you know, we were kind of talking about why we thought it was so great. And I think one of the reasons was both of us had gotten to play just a ton of games that we wanted to. And we played a ton of games, and all of them were just so fun. You know, there wasn't many games that, and I don't want to speak for Dave here, but there wasn't many games that I got pulled into, you know, that I was like, ugh, I don't really want to play this, but fine, I'll play it. You know, I think he kind of felt the same way, where he just kind of played whatever he wanted to. And if he didn't want to play, he didn't play. And nobody cares, you know, you just kind of do your own thing. And another reason I think it was so great, outside of that and outside of the tournaments that I talked about, was there were some party games that we played that kind of brought everyone together and for some reason made everyone really happy and laugh a lot. And one of them is an Oink game that I brought called A Fake Artist Goes to New York. I talked about it on my 2016 in review episode, last episode. But that one went over like gangbusters. It was so great, you know. We got like 10, the max 10 people, I think, to play. Maybe, yeah, I think 10 people's the max, and we got the max to play. And most of them, maybe all of them except a couple, maybe I think Dave had played it before, Jeff had played it before. Everyone else was brand new to the game, and they seemed to love it. You know, we played it a few times over the course of the fest, and every time it was like, you know, this raucous laughter, and just, I loved it. I was like moderating it, and everyone was like cracking up and, you know, pointing fingers, you're the fake artist, fake. And there was some really great drawings drawn, and a lot of cool dynamics, you know, happened in it. And it was just so, I don't know, I had a great time watching everyone else play it and kind of running the thing. And I think that, for me anyway, contributed to the great time that was Nerdfest this year. So that was A Fake Artist Goes to New York. Another kind of party-ish game that we played was one I bought it just kind of for the Nerdfest. I went to one of my local game stores, you know, like a week or so before Nerdfest, and I was just kind of looking around to see if there was anything new that had come out that would play, you know, a bunch of people that was really fast and simple. And I found a Richard Garfield design, a new design, called Hive Mind. And I read the back of the box, and I was just kind of like, eh, this, I don't know, it sounds like, didn't sound that great. So I looked it up on BoardGameGeek, and people were like, oh my god, I don't know why, but this is so much fun. It's really simple, and it almost feels like a mass market type game, but it's I'm having a great time with it. And that seemed to be the consensus of a lot of the comments I read. So, you know, it was $20, so I picked it up. And we must have played it four times, I think, over the course of the fest. Which is pretty good. I mean, there's a ton of people that bring a ton of games there, you know, so this one came out a lot, and it was really, really cool. So the premise of this one is, you know, you have however many people, six people we'll say, and they each have a pencil and paper, and one person draws a card, and the card will have a bunch of questions on it, and you pick one of the questions and ask it to the people. The questions, for instance, will be like, what are the three best board games? You know, or the three most popular board games, right? This is just a for instance question that I'm making up. And so everyone writes down three board games that they think are the most popular. And once everyone does that, you know, the player with the card starts and reads their answers one by one. So the first, you know, answer, okay, Terra Mystica. And then everyone that has Terra Mystica raises their hand. And if you do, so you get 1 point for your answer, plus one additional point for every other person that has that answer. Right? So if I said Terra Mystica, Dave says Terra Mystica, and Jeff says Terra Mystica, we each of the three of us get 3 points. The other three people that didn't say anything don't, you know, they just don't have it, right? So then I say the next one in, you know, Hansa Teutonica. Oh, nobody has Hansa Teutonica. Damn it. Okay, so that's only 1 point for me, right? Because you always get 1 point for your answer. And then I go to the next one, and I say the next one, and then once I've said my three, then we go around the table, and everyone finishes by saying the answers that haven't been said yet, right? So then everyone kind of has a similar, or everyone has a different score at the end, or they should. A lot of times they don't. So then whoever has the lowest score in that round, so like, damn, I only got 3, 4, 5 points, you know, where Dave scored 9 points, or, you know, 9 or 12, whatever. So I have the lowest score. My little bee, meeple, they call beeple, goes down one level of the hive. And there's 6 levels of the hive, and after the 6th level, if you go down again, you lose, and everyone else wins. So basically, first player out of the beehive loses, everyone else that's still in the beehive wins. And it sounds so blah and dull, but it's great. It's a great game, and it was great for parties, and it was great for this party, it was great for this fest. It was a very good, you know, filler game to play in between, you know, games like Trois and Belfort. It's a really cool thing. So we ended Nerdfest this year playing Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition, which I have been enthralled with lately. And I really wanted Dave to play it, like, really badly, because he loves those kind of thematic games. He has Eldritch Horror. You know, he plays all those, like I said, thematic Fantasy Flight games. Those really appeal to him. He enjoys those. And he's also a huge video game fan. He plays, you know, video games all the time still. So not that this is a video game, but Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition feels more like a video game than other board games, you know, because it has this app that you have to play it with. You know, and you still interact with the board, but the app kind of like runs things and moves things along and sets the mood and has this ambient sound. And, you know, so there's some text read and just gets you really engrossed in the theme, which I knew, or I hoped anyway, that he was really going to enjoy. Now, it took a long time to get through. We did terribly. We basically did everything we should have, you know, the thing we were supposed to get, we explored the entirety of the mansion before we found it, and so then the mansion started, like, to break around us and combust and, you know, get destroyed, and we ended up winning, and it was a great time, but that was a good way to end the Nerdfest. And again, this was probably the best Nerdfest, at least Saturday was the best Nerdfest day, I should say, of all the 8 years of Nerdfest that we had. I do an annual geek list every year, and I'm going to be making one now. I'm preparing for that. You know, every year I try to take a picture of every game played. Every year I fail. This year we had a game log on every table because it's Nerdfest, so we're nerds, right? So anytime a game was played, we'd write down the time, the game that was played, and who won. And I'll use that, you know, when I make my geek list on Board Game Geek. And nobody probably reads that damn thing except the people that were there. But it's fun for them, I think. You know, I'll go through every entry. I'll you know, detail as much as I can remember about the game. And if I can't remember, you know, what happened during that play, I'll ask people who were involved in it to, you know, to give their detailing of it. And it's just fun to do. And it's been cool for me to go back and look at other geek lists I've made. I've geek listed the last 4 years, I think. So I think this will be the 5th year I do it. Maybe the 4th year, I can't remember. But again, it's just a really fun thing to do, and it's something to keep me kind of, you know, in a meta mode during Nerdfest. You know, I'm keeping this log and taking these pictures for the after Nerdfest, you know, the post-Nerdfest recap, if you will. So I hope next year's, you know, goes even better than this year's, and I really can't wait to see what's going to happen for the 10th anniversary, the 10th Nerdfest. I don't know what's going to happen. It's going to be off the chain. It's probably going to be the exact same thing. So whatever. So that's Nerdfest. That happened over the weekend. And it was freaking awesome. So now I'd like to talk about some games I've been playing lately. There's about 4 games. Well, I shouldn't say I have been playing lately. I'll say I've played lately that made kind of an impact on me. Or rather, had an impact beforehand. I was really excited to play it. And this is what happened when I did. Okay. So the first one I'll talk about actually also happened at Nerdfest, and it's Inish. So Inish is by Matigo Games, and it's the 3rd game in the Cyclades, I don't know how to pronounce that, Cyclades Kemet line. So if Cyclades was first, or Cyclades, that was the first game, and Kemet was the second, this game, Inish, is the third. And they're all kind of similar. They're all kind of like, you know, Ameritrash Euro hybrid type games. They're considered like the hybrids, you know. The first game, Cyclades, was like this Greek, was it Greek mythology? Like Greek mythology theme. And, but it was like an auction game, you know, at its heart kind of thing. But it had this really cool theme, and you can still attack people and stuff. And it was just kind of one of the first, I feel like, you know, crossovers or hybrid games. And then Kemet came along, and that one was even better, I thought. And it's, that one's got some minis in it, you know, some cool minis in it. Well, Cyclades did too, but it was more like an Egyptian theme game. And it was really, you know, you're just in each other's face attacking the whole time. But it still had kind of like an action selection, you know, mechanism, you know, Euro mechanics to it. And it's just, it was really interesting. It had like tile drafting and, you know, like it was just really, really awesome. And very, but a very beautiful, lush board, you know, tons of different components and stuff involved with all the tiles, and the minis look amazing. And it's just a really cool game. So Inish comes out, and this is another, you know, kind of hybrid. It has these really cool jagged looking tiles. The goal of the game is basically area control, have the most people on tiles, or have, you know, it's all about, you know, having the most of something, or having people on tiles with six of these, or, you know what I mean? There's just three different ways to end the game, which is pretty cool. And, but it's got these, you know, Euro mechanics, and the Euro mechanics are basically your card drafting. You're drafting these cards at the beginning of the game, and it's super awesome. Because these are these oversized cards, and they're gorgeous. The art on the cards is gorgeous. The art on the box is interesting, I'll say. Some people love it. Some people hate it. Some people think it's okay, as Jeff would say. But the art on the cards is just incredible. I love it. So, did I like the game? I don't know. I did. I had fun playing it. It kind of seemed like, I don't want to say it just ended too fast. I don't know. I loved the middle and the end game. The beginning I thought was kind of boring. You know, you're just starting out. You're just putting guys on the map here or there. You don't really have any kind of plan. You're just kind of setting up. And you don't really know the cards yet. You know, you get through the game a little bit and you start seeing, because you play with the same cards every round. And so you see these cards and you kind of get a feel for, okay, this one does this. This one's obviously the best card. You know, if I can get that one, I will, or this one's really good, I'll try to get that one. And you know, some cards let you play guys to the board. Some cards let you move. And if you move into a space with another person, you got to battle, or if you want to, you don't even have to battle, which is actually a pretty cool mechanic. But I don't know what it was about it. I mean, it was good. I really did like it. I even won the game. So again, that tells you something, that I won the game, and I'm not really too sure if I really loved it. I would say that Kemet is probably my favorite of these three games. I would like to play Inish one more time to see if maybe I know what I'm doing a little more, and maybe a more strategy will develop. I just kind of felt like I was, you know, just doing what was presented to me. You know, I drafted these cards, but I really only took what I thought was kind of the most obvious choice to take. And, you know, then I have these cards and I don't know. It just, there was something about it that was lacking this, you know, kind of fun factor for me, I should say. I did enjoy it. But I will say it disappointed me just a touch, and that was Inish. So the next game is a game that kind of took me by surprise a little bit. It's by Simon, and which is weird, and it's called Unusual Suspects. So this is basically, and I kind of wanted to play this at Nerdfest. I should have remembered that I even had it. I kind of forgot that I brought it because there was so many games there. This would have been a really good game to play with the big group. It's called Unusual Suspects. It's basically like a gamer's version. I wouldn't even say a gamer's version. It's just a different version of Guess Who, the old, you know, I don't know, Hasbro. I'm just guessing at who made that game. But the old game, Guess Who. You know, if you don't remember Guess Who was just, you know, you got two boards and they have all these people on them and you're trying to guess which one of the people is the person that, you know, I'm thinking of, right? So you ask questions like, does your person wear glasses? And they'll say no. So I eliminate a bunch of people, you know, based on that. Okay, they don't wear glasses. I eliminate all the people that do wear glasses, right? So this game's the same way, except instead of, like, board with these, like, flippable tiles, you just have cards. So 12 cards come out, and then I draw one card if I'm the person that's, you know, saying yes or no. I draw one card, and it tells me which one of these 12 is the suspect, okay? And these people are just kind of stereotypical-looking people. You know, there's, like, thug-type people. There's, like, rich, snobby-type people. There's, like, you know, loser type looking people, just, you know, stereotypical kind of things. And the game kind of elicits some of this stereotypical, I don't want to say racist, but it just kind of lets you know, what kind of person you really are. Because basically what happens is, you know, I'm the person that has the suspect. So I know which one of the 12 is the suspect. The other players don't. What a player who doesn't does on his turn is draw a card. And the card has a question, and the question will say something like, would this person eat, you know, or would this person eat at a fine dining restaurant, you know? And so you're basically looking at all the cards, and you're eliminating people that you're like, no, that person wouldn't be caught dead at a fine dining restaurant. And, you know, the reasons sometimes are stereotypical. So it's kind of fun to come up with non-stereotypical reasons why somebody would not visit a fine dining restaurant. Or another one is, you know, would this person would this person work in a fast food restaurant? You know what I mean? It's like stuff like that. Like, you're like, how do I answer these? You know, and it's just, it's, I don't know. At first when I played it, I felt a little uneasy. And then I played it again, and I was like, okay, it's just silly, stupid fun. If you take it too seriously, you're going to get offended. I don't know. It's really a good game, I think. It's super fast, super quick, and that's Unusual Suspects. Another one I wanted to play is called Ulm by Hutch Games. I think I talked about it in the 2016 review podcast that I wanted to, you know, give that a play. And my buddy Jeff came over one day, and he was just kind of like, hey, let's play a game. What do you want to play? He looked at my shelf, and he was like, what's this game? And I was like, oh, I really want to play that. Let's play it. So we pulled it out and played a two-player game of it, and it was great. I brought it to Nerdfest hoping to get it played. That was one that didn't get played, but I didn't push for it either, so it's not a big deal. But we played a two-player game of it, and like I said, I think he liked it even better than I did, to be honest with you. But I really, really liked it. He beat me on a tiebreaker, and it was like super competitive and really, really fun. It's got this really cool mechanic in it, which I haven't seen before. It's kind of like a classic Euro-style game, but it has this cool mechanic. There's like this 3x3 grid. Everything happens with these tiles, okay? So these tiles are how you take actions, and these tiles are laid out randomly on this 3x3 grid. And so what you do on your turn is you pull a tile from a bag, a mystery tile, right? So the tile you pull will say is, this tile says, okay, play a card. That's the tile. So you take that tile and you put it next to one of the three, so like I said, 3x3 grid where there's other tiles. You put it in a row or a column, like right in front of one of these three tiles. And you push with your tile these three tiles, you know, say it's the middle three, from top to bottom. You push those tiles down, right? So one tile falls off of the grid, and then the tile that you just drew and pushed, you take that action, plus the next action in the row, plus the next action in the row. You take all three of those actions, and then, you know, the next player goes and draws a tile, and then pushes a different, you know, say I push the column down, the next person might push a row over, and they're taking three different actions, but I could be setting them up to take actions if they really want to, or I don't know it, but you could also use it to kind of be like, oh, there's two actions where you get money here. Okay, I'm going to push this one down, so one of those money actions goes off the board, and this is probably confusing living crap out of all of you, but I promise you I'm explaining it pretty decent if you play the game. Anyway, you don't need to know any more about that. It's a really, really, really cool mechanic, and I encourage you to look for the game. I found it on a thread of where people said, you know, what were the games that flew under the radar for 2016? And Ulm was, you know, one that got a lot of votes, specifically from Rado, whose opinion I value, especially on two-player games. Not that this is a two-player strictly game. It was just fun with two players, so I'm glad we got to play it. I really wanted to play it with more. I think it would be even more competitive. You know, we still got to kind of do really what we wanted to do. We didn't screw each other over too much. We don't play that way, first of all. We don't just try to screw each other over. But what I mean by that is we didn't get in each other's way. You know, we're in a four-player game. I think you're going to be getting in each other's way more, which just kind of makes you think harder about, you know, how you're going to spend your turn. You know, what can I really do to maximize the point values of my turn? And it's a very cool experience, and it really, really is fast. I mean, with learning the rules, because I didn't know how to play, so we both learned the rules together. With learning the rules, setting the game up, playing the game, tearing it down, it was about an hour. And that is pretty, pretty cool for a game like this. And again, it's kind of like Istanbul, where it has this weight that I just love. This light, medium type weight is a weight that I really, really enjoy. And seize the table. Those kind of games see the table more often than the heavier stuff, just because it's easier to get to the table, you know, and it's like, again, still has that crunch that I like. I'm not super math brain, so I struggle sometimes with the heavier games. So these games, I actually feel like I know what I'm doing enough to not necessarily win, but to compete, and it just has, I have a good time with it. So that's Ulm. The last one I'll talk about is Terraforming Mars. And again, this one, you know, came out from Stronghold Games this year, and it was kind of the toast of the town when it came out. Actually, it is still now. People still talk about it like, you know, like crazy, because it's just really good, apparently, right? So I finally got it to the table the day before Nerdfest. I think I played it on Thursday, or maybe when, I don't know, right before Nerdfest I got it to the table, because a buddy of mine, Eric, wanted to play it at Nerdfest. Incidentally, we didn't play it, but anyway, I learned it and got it played. So I played a two-player game of it, and it was pretty good. It wasn't, I don't know, I gotta play it again, because it's all card play, and there's so many cards, and you don't really have any clue on your first play. You have no clue what's better to play than what else, you know, what cards are better to play than others. You just don't really know. So you're playing stuff, you're putting stuff on the board, you're building up the planet, you know, and the cool thing about it is it takes generations. So each turn is a generation, so you're spanning, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years to like build up this planet of Mars by, you know, building cities and building, you know, forests and oceans and all this kind of stuff. And the coolest thing about the game, I think what people love about the game is the card play and how the cards interact with the other cards. It's very, very, very cool how the cards interact with each other. And that's where the fun of the game is. You know, you play a card at the beginning of the game that says, each time you play a space card, you get, you know, $3 and three, you know, coal or whatever the resources are. And so you try, okay, now I kind of have strategy to go for. So now I get cards in my hand every turn, and you're drafting again if you play the variant, so that kind of mitigates the luck. We didn't in our first play. But anyway, you got these cards, and you're like, okay, how many of these are space cards? Okay, I want to keep these. The trick is, though, you can keep as many cards as you want. You draw four cards every turn. You can keep them all if you want. But you have to pay $3 per card to keep, you know, and money is kind of, you know, you're like, I don't have the money. I really want to do this with my money, but God, I need these cards. These are great cards. So that's, again, where some of the fun is you're making these decisions on what do I pay for versus how do I spend my money? Do I save it on, you know, do I spend it on these cards that could really get me ahead in the game? Or do I save my money to do this really big turn that I've been dying to do to get this card in play, you know, for the last three turns? Like, I don't know. All the cards seem good, you know? So the game was just a lot of fun in that way. And I think it will really honestly get a lot more fun with more plays. The problem I have with it is it's very long. I played a two-player game with Heather, my wife, and it took hours. I don't even know why. I felt like we were going quick, but it was like 3 hours went by, and I was like, holy cow. And so if I played the four-player game of this, you know, at Nerdfest, it would have taken all day. And I think that was one of the reasons I didn't really, you know, reach into the bag and say, hey, let's play this. You know, I wanted to kind of maximize my game playing at Nerdfest, which I did, thankfully. So those are some of the games I've played lately. For the last few minutes here, I want to talk about the challenge that I'm doing this year. And I'm determined this year to succeed. It's January 24th. As of the recording of this podcast, and My 10x10 challenge for 2017 has begun. I am about 18% of the way along already, which is fantastic. Granted, that's a lot of games that take a very minimal amount of time to play. So again, the 10x10, if you haven't heard the other episodes, if this is the first episode you're listening to, I feel like I've talked about it a lot in previous episodes. The 10x10 is basically play 10 games, 10 times each, and you have the entire year to do it. Sarah Reed, Silver Shadow, she's the one that started this whole thing, these crazy shenanigans, and it just caught on like wildfire. So you pick 10 games. The 10 games I picked were, drumroll, blah, 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 Star Wars Destiny, Sekigahara, The Unification of Japan, Carson City, Onitama, A Feast for Odin, Claustrophobia, Seven Wonders Duel, Mechs vs. Minions, The Castles of Burgundy, possibly the card game, I haven't determined yet, and Hanama Koji. So, I've got 10 plus games of Star Wars Destiny. You'll notice a lot of these are two-player games. This is because I kind of did this with Jeremy in mind. He's really primarily the guy that I play most of my games with. I'm going to start the game group back up soon. Rob, if you're listening, that means you. But up until then, it's been really, you know, once in a while, Jeremy and I will play together. And when we do, we just play Star Wars Destiny. So we played this game 27 or 28 times already this year. We were thinking about doing a 1x100 of it. But that game is so freaking awesome. It was my number one game on my 2016 year in review list, top 10 of the year. And I still am infatuated with it. I have a new booster box for the next set that's released, I don't know, sometime in April, I think, on pre-order. I'm super pumped about it. I got pretty much every card in the Awakening set that came out. And Jeremy and I are just building decks and playing them and beating the crap out of each other. And it's awesome. So we've made our 10 plays of Star Wars Destiny already. Sekigahara, The Unification of Japan, is a block war game, a light block war game, as I'm to understand. My feeble brain can't really comprehend war games. I've played it one time with Jeff a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, and I fell in love with it. It was incredible. I loved it. It was amazing. Everything I hoped it would be. So I want Jeremy to get into it. I think he'll really enjoy it. That's Sekigahara. We have no plays of that so far. Carson City is a game that Jeremy owns. It's one of his favorites. He loves the game. I used to own it, got rid of it because the one play I had was just pretty dreadful. I played it with him, two player, a little bit. I think on our very first podcast we talked about Carson City, and it was amazing. It was like an hour and 20 minutes and it was done, and I was like shocked at how quick it was, and it was so good with two. So, and he loves it and I love it, so we're gonna throw that in the mix too. That has zero plays as well. Onitama is like a little chess variant type game, and it's really super quick. You got five cards total. I have two cards, and you have two cards. And there's one card that's in the middle of the table, basically, or on the side of the board. You know, and the cards that you have tell you how you can move. So I have five pawns on the board, and one card, you know, there's a black square on each card, and then there's like colored squares around that black square. The black square is whatever piece you want to move. So you just pick a piece, doesn't matter. It's all the same. I pick the guy in the middle, who's my like captain guy. So I pick this card to play him with. My black square is where he starts, you know, so, or that's zero, we'll say. So whatever space my guy's on is the black square. And then all the colored squares around that are where that guy's allowed to move to. And so, say, you know, there's a colored square diagonal up and to the left of the black square. So I move my guy diagonal up to the left. And then after I played that card, I put that card in the middle and I take the neutral middle card that was there. Then my opponent plays a card and then replaces and then takes that, you know, takes the card that I just played and puts it in front of him. So we're swapping cards back the whole game. And it's really, really, really cool design. It's one of those designs that I really wish I came up with. You know, it's one of those kind of games. Like, how did I not think of this? It's so simple. And I hate this word, but it's so elegant. It's just one of those words that just, I feel like it's overused in the board game community. But it is. This game is the definition of elegance. It's just beautiful. It's simple. And it's just very, very quick and easy to play. So we have three plays of that so far, or I should say I have three plays of that so far. I mean, this 10x10 is set up for me and Jeremy, but I mean, it's technically mine. So if I play a game that's on there, even without Jeremy, I'd still log it, right? So number three, it's got three plays. the next five games have zero plays. So A Feast for Odin, I talked about that last episode. That's Uwe Rosenberg's newest big box game, and I cannot wait to get that played. It's going to be tough to get 10 plays of that, but I really can't wait. The next game on the list is one of my all-time favorites, and that's Claustrophobia. Jeremy seems to really love it. It's, again, two players, asymmetrical. Dudes on a map style dungeon crawl thing where I'm the good guys trying to, you know, go down into the catacombs of Heldorado, which is, I believe, the universe that Croc, the designer, has set Claustrophobia in and created. And, you know, I'm this redeemer who's coming down with these condemned warriors, you know, who are, like, condemned to die, basically. They're, like, these horrible people. And I, as this redeemer, have said, hey, you come down and fight in the catacombs with me, and I'll free you, you know? So you're just, you do that instead. And they're like, okay, I'll fight some monsters instead of just get hanged or whatever. So then Jeremy is plays the role of the demon. And the demon has all these troglodytes, and they're down in these, you know, catacombs, and they're trying to, like, get up to the surface, and me as the redeemer, me and the condemned warriors have to fight off these troglodytes and demons to try to, you know, save the world. And it's brilliant. It's completely asymmetrical, and, you know, he plays a lot different than I play, and it's just so much fun. It's so much fun. The next one is Seven Wonders Duel. I talked about that last episode. I explained it like a giant piece of crap, and I apologize for that. Hopefully, if you didn't understand my explanation, you know, went and looked it up. But if not, I'll try to do a little bit better job. You basically have a pyramid of cards, and you're drafting cards from this pyramid instead of from each other like in regular Seven Wonders. You're drafting cards from this pyramid, and you're either, like, discarding them to get money, putting them in front of you to use, or discarding them for your wonder to build. And you play three rounds of it, and it's just a really cool back-and-forth thing that you have with your opponent. And Jeremy loves it. Seven Wonders is one of his favorite games anyway. Seven Wonders Duel might even be better to me. I think it might even be better. It just plays quicker. It's a little faster. Well, I guess I just said the same thing. It plays quicker. It plays, I don't know, just plays better. It seems smooth. You know, it's kind of silky smooth in the way it plays. So that's Seven Wonders Duel. The next one is Mechs versus Minions. This one is kind of perfect for a challenge like this because it has a little bit of a legacy aspect to it. You need to play this game multiple times to open the new content, you know, after you play a scenario. So this one is an action programming game, you know, kind of like Robo Rally. Again, I talked about it last episode, so I won't go on and on about it this time. But we're excited to get this one played. Beautiful components, beautiful, you know, production, and the gameplay. We played it and tested it out, and it was fantastic. That's Mechs versus Minions. The next one is just a tried and true, you know? We wanted to have some games on here that we know we love, and we both love the Castles of Burgundy. We have both played the Castles of Burgundy a bit, so I have the Castles of Burgundy, the card game, and we played it one time, and it was good. It was, like, really good, and we really enjoyed it. So that might be the version of it that we play, to try to, you know, maybe squeeze out 10 plays of that and see if it's as, you know, if it warrants having both in my collection. Because I have both. I probably don't need both. They're very similar. But I liked it enough, the card game, that is, to play it more to see, you know, what I can get out of it, really. So that's the Castles of Burgundy. The last one, this is the one that's kind of up for contention. I have a conundrum. It's called the Hanama Koji Conundrum is what is you know, what I have. The game is called Hanama Koji. The conundrum I have is, it's quick, right? So we have five plays of it so far. But I don't like it. And neither does Jeremy. We don't really like it. Every time I play it, I'm like, why are we playing this? This isn't even fun. It's just so fast. So part of me, I'm torn, you know? Part of me is like, do I just play this five more times? You know, it wouldn't take very long, and then one of the 10x10 would be satisfied, and I could concentrate more on other stuff. Or do I even bother playing it again? Part of me doesn't want to. I have Santorini, which is a, you know, pretty much the hotness, you know, two-player abstract strategy game. I have that coming in the mail. And, you know, Jeremy's, like, one of his favorite style games are abstract strategy games. So I kind of am like, should we just replace Hanama Koji with Santorini? I don't know. It's a conundrum. I'll say that. It's definitely first world problems here, but I'm not sure. So the art on Hanamakoji is great. The theme on Hanamakoji is great. The gameplay just confounds me. I don't understand how to do well. I've won this game two of the five times I've played it, I've won. And both times I won. I had no clue how I won. The other three times, I lost, and I had no clue why I lost. And I really don't think the person that beat me had any clue how or why they won. It's just kind of like, well, here we go. Play this card. I picked this action, which lets you do this. I don't really understand how to have any control over anything. I feel like the game plays you. You just pick an action, you kind of do what it says, and you hope for the best. And it's not fun for me like that. I didn't really like it. Like I said, Santorini may be the one that swoops in and just takes over. We'll see. So I'm really hoping that I can get this accomplished. I bought this beautiful 10x10 board from this guy on Etsy. And it's just really awesome. It's hanging up in my game room right now, staring me in the face, basically taunting me like, come on, you gonna complete me or what? You know? And I'm up for the challenge. I hope we're going to try to dig into some Sekigahara this week and get some more of this done. So I got 18 plays total, you know, 10 Star Wars Destiny, 3 Onitama, and 5 Hanamakoji. Bleh. And we'll try to get some more of that going now. So that's the 10x10 challenge. I encourage all of you to try this 10x10 challenge. It's early enough still. It's only January. Try the 10x10 challenge for yourself. Pick 10 games, you know, avoid the Cult of the New. I am king Cult of the New. I see there's a new shiny toy. Santorini's a prime example. You know, ooh, that's the new hotness. I want to get that sucker. So, but it's good to focus, you know, take 10 games and focus on those 10 games. Figure out what the designer really intended for this game. Figure out exactly what they want. You know, you play a game once, especially a strategy game like A Feast for Odin, you don't play it again for another year. Did you really get what the designer intended? Probably not, because you don't understand exactly what to do. You know, Terraforming Mars is a perfect example of this. I don't know. The first play, I was like, I don't know. What was I doing? Inish is another example. I don't really know what I'm doing. You want to play those games more times to fully realize their value. And that's what this 10x10 is meant to do. It's meant to focus you away from playing games once or twice and then not playing them again. And it's supposed to take you and get you to hopefully appreciate what the designer truly intended from these games and, you know, make you play more. Because it's all about playing more. Play more. More of the same, you know, and hopefully you can save some money in your wallet. So, whatever. Anyhow, episode 12 coming to a close. For the ghost of Jeremy Pete, I am Ryan James, and you have been listening to The Game Casters.